This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Well, it's some picks.
Hello, everybody. This is David Bixenspan here with a new edition of The Bix Show at davidbix.com. Took last week off because I had some other stuff I needed to take care of in the meantime, but I am back this week with a guest I've been really looking forward to talking to, Josh Watko, who you may know from his blog, wrestlingmemorabilia.blogspot.com. He's also JW's Wrestling Mem on Twitter. That's JWS Wrestling Mem, M-E-M, on Twitter. We've never really talked, but I mean, I've at least sort of been vaguely acquainted with you, geez, since pretty much the entire time I've been online. I mean, going back to, I got your little email newsletter you did back in, when was that, like 97, 98?
Oh, yeah, I was going to bring that up. I didn't even know. I remember you from years ago, and just, it was funny because, between the time that I did the newsletter and the blog, I used to have people always say, you know, what happened to the newsletter? What happened to the newsletter? And a friend of mine had said that he met a cousin of yours online or something that asked about it.
Yes,
I don't know,
Eric.
But your name was brought up. Yeah, okay, yeah. So yeah, I've known the name Bix for a long time.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember that was kind of stemming from, what was it? It was the wrestling figure. The wrestling figures folder was part of WWE's area on AOL, right?
That, yeah, and they had the grandstand.
Right, and they
AOL,
also had the grandstand.
Which is a little more independent.
Yes.
It grew out of both of those, absolutely. And I was told that the WWF marketing people even read my newsletter back then based on from the AOL, their little AOL site. So that was kind of cool. Whether it was true or not, I don't know. But
yeah, and it's weird just thinking back to those days, like how, like all the little things that were rumored and stuff, and how some of it's even relevant now, because it was only about 6 months ago, maybe a little more, that the prototype heads for the unreleased Hasbro WWF action figures from 1994-ish surfaced, which had,
right.
The big rumor was always, like, it seemed like it was always the little things, like if there were rumors, like there were like the card backs were going to be orange because they had the green cards before that and all that, and then it was the different ones were rumored, and then all of a sudden, pretty recently, after everyone thinking that they were probably never real, they finally surfaced. So, I mean, what can you tell me about that to start with?
Right, they were supposed to be the orange cards coming after the green. The green didn't really get distributed very well. Hill's department store, which is from a Pittsburgh area and a little beyond, mainly got them in. I'm not sure they ever hit Toys R Us or anything like that.
Actually, they did.
Did they? Okay.
One friend of mine did manage to go to Toys R Us to pick, and actually, I think he got most of them. And they didn't have them long though.
Yeah, here, I don't remember them at all, Toys R Us. Hills had them, like I said, and then Figures Inc., which is now Figures Toy Company and Wrestling Superstore, they got a ton of them and sold them out at pretty reasonable prices. Then the rumor was the orange cards, and it was rumored, there were always rumors of Jeff Jarrett, All-American Lex Luger, Man on a Mission, different Doink. That's off the top of my head. And then, yeah, the supposed prototypes, I think they've been confirmed by some Hasbro employees, did surface the heads at least. And, of course, if you know Hasbro, the heads are pretty much all that would be able to confirm it, because they probably would have reused bodies like they always did anyway from the older figures. At the time, all we had was the rumor of the orange cards and the rumored lineup. On my newsletter, I was able to actually, out of the blue, Just Toys employee shared with me some pictures from one of their company catalogs, because they had kind of taken over where Hasbro left off and did the Bendems line,
right.
Which were in a similar scale, but they did do the first Diesel, which that was another one that was rumored for the orange card, Diesel, and they did him. And then the employee shared with me photos of a prototype of Dink, which was to come with the ring, and Adam Bomb, who was never released, and some different colored Mabel with some more Men on a Mission color rather than King Mabel, and I think a different Davy Boy also. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So back then, what do you remember being the original source of the rumors? Was it just a guy on the forum or what?
Right, yeah. I guess it was people who had contacts within the companies, yeah. I couldn't even tell you where the orange card rumor came from. Just it appeared there, and pretty much everybody was thinking, oh, you know, it's going to happen. And then there was even a rumor that it was going to happen overseas, just in England, which, you know, would have been believable because the Galoob line, the WCW Galoob line, which was similarly scaled, they didn't have a second series here in the U.S., but in the U.K. they did with Big Josh and the Freebirds and Gigante and Dustin Rhodes.
So was this actually something that was, like, were you on AOL going back a few years before and they were being talked about then?
The orange card line?
Yeah.
It was
94 itself? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the orange card line was talked about on AOL then at the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I would have gotten on AOL around 94, 95, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy that, like, so it was 20 years then. That this rumor was around, and then it was last year, was early last year, now that I found it, it surfaced, and the first picture that showed up, it looks like it's Mo, Mabel, a new Undertaker, Jeff Jarrett, a new Lex Luger, and there's a Kerry Von Erich in there, I think just, I don't know if that's just to show the scale or whatever, but...
Or legitimacy or something, yeah, since he was released. Yeah, 92. Yeah, so the Undertaker, I think, was hatless because the original two releases three technically had the hat, you know, connected. You couldn't remove it, but it would have been interesting to see what they would have done, especially, you know, let's see, the green cards came out late 94. You know, 95 was almost the time with all the most cartoonish gimmicks of that era. Who knows what they could have done?
Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think back.
I was just
going
to say Duke the Dumpster Drosy and characters like that. Just they begged for action figures and just didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think back to that time, like early time when I was online, so like 97, 98, 99, and people were really nostalgic about the Hasbro action figures at that time, which ran from 90 to 94. And I mean, yes, I was one of them. I mean, there were some that were almost a little too passionate about them. But I think part of it was that Jack Specific had gotten the license in 96, I believe.
Yes.
And people forget, especially once Jack really became kind of a pioneer with the scanning, and once WWF took off for them, they made some very, very poor action figures originally. And that led to a big backlash against them and people wanting Hasbro-style figures and all that. And it took a long time. I mean, it wasn't until, 2001, 2002, that Jax was really this kind of respected action figure company.
Right. They kept changing their styles. They went from the bone crunching to the R3 tech, which were kind of almost spindly looking. They didn't really reflect the wrestlers' physiques at all. You're right. It was early 2002 when they released the Ruthless Aggression style that became almost their trademark because they went from the current stars. They did some. That first series had John Cena in the purple tights. Rico, great Rico. I mean, Rico had a great action figure for, you know, Rico's a nice guy, but still it was Rico. not too long later, they used that same style with their Classic Superstars line, which is one of my personal favorites. And that just, I think, even though I grew up with Hasbro and kind of grew up with LJN and those are beloved, I will always say the Classic Superstars line is the ultimate wrestling figure line. I don't think it's ever going to be topped.
Yeah, I mean, those came out pretty much once I was done, you know, collecting action figures or anything. But I got a few, like, especially because, like, for me, like, it was a little bit of a trek to have to go to Toys R Us where I am. It was easier, like, mostly would just go to a KB, which didn't really have them. So, like, when KB, like, I would walk in there maybe
and they'd make, like, if you know how so KB, the way they always worked over the years was all of a sudden they'd get these giant amounts of, you know, whatever, whether it was, right, you know, foreign carded action figures or whatever that they'd have either heavily discounted or somewhat discounted. Like, I remember, like, I got the Freebirds once they showed up there, like, at a discount. I know I got Zeus, but I think it was just, it was because it was there when they had those, but I think those were only the only ones I got. But I mean, from looking at pictures and stuff, and actually there was like a used record store that bought like a small collection from someone once, and they had the Rockers, and I got it pretty much to sell right away because it was only $10 and they had already been, mm-hmm, the value had already gone up. So I think I sold them on eBay for like $50. But mm-hmm, they were really nicely made figure. Like, you could tell that they were that whoever was working on them at Jax, though, was really just really into getting everything right.
Right. And it was just, for me, it was a question. As a kid, I thought, you know, I was reserved to thinking I would never get a figure of Outlaw Ron Bass or, right, Bastion Booger or Luna Vachon. She had some Jax, earlier Jax, but just I never figured that I would see newer figures of those older, almost territorial stars like Ron Bass, Johnny Rods, who never really made it on the national level that big. And yet there they were. You know, Tully Blanchard, I never thought after him being out of the spotlight for 20 years, he would get an action figure, but he's still getting some new ones today. But, and then you had older collectors or people who never collected action figures and were just old-time wrestling fans saying, oh my God, there's new Harley Race figures. You know, I got to get some of these. And then you had the autograph collectors saying, oh, I could get these autographed, which that became a tedious act in itself, almost, trying to get them all signed, at least as many as you could. But I can't put into words how much I love that line. It's great.
The one thing that I think Jack Specific really got right in their time with the WWE license was, you know, and it took a few years, like we talked about a few minutes ago, but I think they were the first company to really look at it in, like, a bigger picture as a toy. What else can we make with these? Because they were the first company to make all, like, accessory sets, like the tables and everything. I mean, they were the first ones to really do more than just action figures in a ring.
Right. They even early on, I think as early as 97, which would have been, it was less than a year into the line, they did their ringside collections where they had announcers and managers and referee. They even released some accessory packs that had cameramen in them. So they did look beyond the ring. Whereas Hasbro, one of the things that always got me about Hasbro, as much as I love the line, no one was made beyond the wrestlers. No one. It was just the wrestlers, no managers, nothing else. So you were kind of limited as far as playability anyway.
Which, I mean, it's understandable for if you ever walked into a toy store, like, late in when LJN's line was out or when Jax had the ringside collection or stuff like that. Those never really sold that well. So, I mean, it's understandable, right, that you wouldn't do it. But
right. That's why Mattel today is they think the females don't sell as well. I disagree there, but they do limit when they release females or manager figures. They've limited them in the case. They'll put more Cenas in the case than your Paul Heyman, that sort of thing. So
yeah, and I guess, you know what, that makes me think of something that I did want to ask about. I'll just throw it out there. Dusty Rhodes, Dusty Rhodes Hasbro figure, which it's been usurped certainly in the last decade or so, but for a long time was probably the most, I don't know if it was actually the absolute rarest, but as far as retail released figures would go, was pretty much the hardest to find. And I never quite understood what the actual reason was. Like, I mean, and the value's gone down even over the years. Like, I had missed out on it when it first came out. When that series came out, I went to the store. I got a Jim Duggan because I didn't want to be shown up by my friend because that's the one he got. And then when I went back, there were no more Dusty Rhodes, even though it was kind of the one I really wanted in the first place. But a few mm-hmm. years ago, I finally got one out of the package for like $20. So, like, because I finally just had to have it if I didn't have to spend a lot of money for it. But what was the actual reason, as far as you know? Was it just short packed, or was it also removed from later shipments? What exactly happened?
Yeah, from what I've heard, he was removed after he departed, and Lord knows if anyone has burned into this, but of course he went right to WCW, as you know, so I don't know if that was a factor in it or what, but I do believe he was taken out of the case packs, and he may have been replaced with more Snuka. I'm not too sure on that one, but I think that might have been it. I never had any problem finding him. In fact, I had him. I found him again at the Hills department store, and I remember seeing him elsewhere. And then a few years later, like 2 or 3 years later, my family was on a vacation, and we found a whole bunch of Hasbros for $1 each in the cart at a store called James Way. They were clearing them out, and there was a Dusty Rhodes, and no, I already had it. I didn't pick up an extra one. But the only Hasbro I never saw at retail at all, and I even got the Royal Rumble, the legendary Royal Rumble mini ring at retail. The only item I never saw at retail was the Nasty Boys, and that was a case problem. They just released a case of all LOD, and then they integrated the Nasty Boys in with the LOD later on. And some people had problems finding LOD. I don't know how that happened, but I never saw the Nasty Boys at retail. I ended up getting them from Figures Inc., who I mentioned before also. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I remember James Way, but I'm trying to remember. I remember the name. I'm trying to figure out where it was. Because I'm looking up now. It was some kind of discount department store.
It was more like Kmart, yeah.
So what were you saying about Dusty, though?
Yeah, he's very – there's a ton of them out there because, like you said, you got one loose for $20. I see them a lot, anywhere from 10 to 20 loose. There's some differences with the carded versions. Some have the SummerSlam sweepstakes sticker, some don't. It's still good. I usually around like between 200 and 400. Sometimes, you know, it's all about the bidders and who wants it at the time, you know, especially on eBay. You know, if two people want it a lot, they'll bid it up to way more than, you know, it really should be going for as far as how rare it really is.
The actual hardest to find of the Dusties is the Canadian one with the trading card, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I know there's a big difference, like I said, between the SummerSlam sweepstakes sticker and the one without the sticker. And the sweepstakes sticker had the little Hogan SummerSlam flyer kind of between the legs.
Right.
And then the trading card with the motion card. Yeah, there's probably a difference there, too. Yeah.
So as far as the Nasty Boys, though, that one I actually got at a house show. It was the only figures they had, and it was just $8 Nasty Boys. And me and my cousin actually both each got one, and that was the only time I did see that. And I don't remember if I saw Legion of Doom in stores. That was actually a weird one. How I ended up getting that, I had bought some at KB. Of course, it always comes back to KB. Some kind of discounted monster truck knockoff type toy set, and it was a nice little thing, but there was a missing piece of something. And it was made by Tonka, and Tonka was the same company as Hasbro. And when my mom called, like, they didn't make it anymore, so they couldn't send me a replacement. They didn't have them anymore. And in thinking about how they can make it up, one of the, like, the first thing they asked my mom was, does your son like pro wrestling? So what they ended up sending was Legion of Doom and the re-release of the Bushwhackers that had come out around the same time. And I already had the Bushwhackers, so I just gave that to my cousin.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. The Legion of Doom, like I said, because they got all the solid Legion of Doom cases, no Nasty Boys whatsoever, all the stores, they were on clearance in Toys R Us Hill. So, you know, they were probably, Hasbro Talk was probably sitting on a lot of those, and that's why they said, oh, yeah, send them on.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about with the different rumors and stuff, has there been anything that actually didn't turn out to be true over the years? Like, that was widespread. Orange cards, at least the content of the figures turned out to be true. I mean, I guess it's not a true-false thing because we know it was planned, but the Greg Valentine prototype finally showed up. Rhythm and Blues, excuse me, Greg Valentine. I'm trying to think. I feel like there's something else. I mean, maybe it's just, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's all rumors or whatever. Like, there are maybe, like, a couple things that were prototypes that haven't found their ways to collectors' hands yet. Like the ring that's in that same Toys R Us ad that had the Greg Valentine. But it just seems, I can't think of anything that was, like, that stuck around that was a rumor about anything or whether something existed or whatever that really turned out to be, like, completely false.
Right. The ring you mentioned, that's the one that has the cloth skirt on it. I think I've always thought that was more for maybe just something they put on for the photo for the ad, because it was in the ad for Toys R Us that ended up in the magazine. One production sketch that has surfaced is Tugboat. And it looks like he would have had, like, the early number one Big Boss Man style body.
Yeah.
And then, a tugboat head, which probably ended up as Typhoon. And that's why that didn't occur, because of that. As far as any other early on wrestlers, from Hasbro at least, I can't remember too many that may have been rumored. Or, like you said, it was almost the Dark Ages back then as far as info, unless you had a connection.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I always thought weird about the Rhythm and Blues thing was that they made it onto the card backs, at least the initial ones. Like, because the tag teams, they didn't have pictures, but they listed who the tag teams were that was coming out and said Rockers, Demolition, Bushwhackers, Rhythm and Blues.
Mm-hmm.
And
also available, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was one of those things that confused me as a kid. And then not long after that, the individual Honky Tonk Man came out, which I think was what actually replaced Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, I think it might have been it. Yeah, although he left around the same time, so it's kind of weird that Hasbro would have done that. But who really knows how much info they had as far as comings and goings? You know, like,
yeah, I always thought it would be weird. I never bought that as the reason.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, maybe. You know, he was the last of the three that had that that particular real wrestling action with a little. All it is a little wire in there. It's like a kind of like a thin piece of wiry substance. Maybe they recalled him because they. I mean, my Andre broke in half. So,
okay, see, I always kind of had that theory too that might have been why, because Dusty. Well, and for a while, Andre the Giant and Akeem were some of the harder ones to find. Andre. Still kind of, Akeem not as much. Akeem seemed to kind of become more common over the years. But they were always among the more hard to find of the earlier figures. So I always wondered if that had something to do with it.
They never reused that that action. They kind of went to the bigger guys, they went to the Earthquake style action, which they used for Earthquake, Typhoon, and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah.
So, which was a lot better. And those ones could actually sit, which was quite different from the Hasbros, which were really limited in their posability.
Yeah. And speaking of recalls, though, LJN did have a recall that was after the line didn't exist anymore, and after the company didn't exist anymore, which was that their ring got recalled because kids had gotten impaled on the ring post.
Right, yeah, and that's, I remember that recall. It came out, like you said, way after the LJN line ended, and it was, I think it was posted in Walmarts, and I remember hitting the early news, wrestling news sites, you know, oh, wrestling toy ring recall, and then people saying, LJN, they haven't made that in years, you know, and then when Jax got the mold for that ring, they ended up using the larger ring post. They had kind of like a circle on top of them, I guess, so the same thing wouldn't happen.
Yeah, so what was the deal with, because I know they had common, like, management or whatever. How did they end up with the mold, though, like, to the ring? Like, how did that happen? I didn't never really understood that.
Yeah, apparently the guy who started Jax broke away from LJN, and I assume they just bought the molds from the remnants of LJN or took them or something of that nature. Yeah, they were way too big for the initial Jax figures, but it was kind of interesting to have a little connection there. And then, of course, you had the black molded Raw's War Ring, and LJN's in the Attitude Era, you know?
It was a little too big, but to be honest, it was probably closer to scale than a lot of wrestling rings actually were.
Right, as far as length and width, absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Monster Ring.
And Hasbro made a change to their ring, I think, stemming from the recall. I mean, that's the only way I could figure that it happened, because their original ring had the same type of posts, and then the replacement had the little platforms for the wrestlers to spring off of if it had that action.
Right, and there were various colors, too. They did a dark, real dark blue, almost a black color, and then they did the lighter, well, it's not really light, but a lighter blue than the darker blue or black one. So there's a couple variations there. And then, of course, my favorite, the King of the Ring ring, the yellow and red one.
Well, and also the second ring was actually bigger than the older ring, which is one of those things that, like, I never really, like, I posted it once, like, I think on WrestlingFigs.com, and no one had really noticed it before, but I had taken my ring to a friend's house when I was a kid, and he had the newer ring, and I had the older ring, and I noticed it was a little bit bigger.
That I did not know. That's something new to me. See, I'm learning too. Yeah, I remember about the ring is it must have been the very first thing they worked on, because it's actually stamp dated 1989, and of course the figures and didn't come out, and they're all dated 1990. So that must have been the very first thing that Hasbro jumped on as far as running into production was the ring.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I wonder when did they actually make the deal? I guess.
I guess it would have been sometime in mid to late 1989, because the LJNs were all but done then, and of course the last series came out through Canada, so the Wrestling Superstars 89.
Well, so I was wondering about that, and kind of the last thing I wanted to ask about on with the figures was, for now at least, was international exclusives and stuff like that. So the last series of the LJNs, which ended up being released through Grand Toys in Canada, were they exclusive to Canada, or was it just that it happened to be a Canadian company and they didn't have as good distribution?
Right. They weren't exclusive to Canada, because I saw them in Circus World here in Pittsburgh, I'd say around 89 or 90. You know, probably close out prices, because Circus World, I don't know if at that time, but eventually it became part of KB. So they did the same sort of close out deals. I vividly remember the black cards here in America. On sale, so it's possible Toys R Us didn't jump on board, because, like you said earlier, they were still closing out Freddie Blassie and Mean Gene, so they didn't. They probably were waiting for a new line to come along, and that's of course what became Hasbro. But I do think also the tag team set had a better distribution in Canada, also.
Oh, I'm trying to remember, right? Because don't some of the tag team sets, or a good amount of that are available, have like. Bilingual packaging from Quebec or something like that.
Yep. Some okay. A lot of the single ones that I have carded do also. So it was always, I think, a pretty good distribution in Canada as far as those LJNs. And then, of course, the last series were actually produced there, Grand Toys.
Yeah. Do you know anything else about Grand Toys? I mean, who were they?
No, I really don't. I've never looked into it, to be honest, but, they share the rainbow with LJN, if you've ever noticed that. So I don't know if it was just LJN's foray into Canada or a completely separate toy company. I mean, they did produce them a little bit different. And
because they were a little out of scale. Some of them were a little out of scale. And
Yeah, and the Boss Man's really big. And, of course, they had the different stamping. The stamp wasn't molded into the body. It was a white painted stamp on the foot that can come off. They, of course, they're notorious for, well, LJN did it too, but those last ones, some of the paint, you know, splotching off, so.
Well, was the problem with the later ones as much that the paint came off, or more that they used the different color rubber?
Right, and the middle ones, the gang, DiBiase, Honky Tonk Man, yeah.
Right.
That's always been another topic of controversy among the LJN collectors, is who was really released on the black cards, because, you know, everybody knows Boss Man and Warrior, but then they also re-released some, and, you know, there's an example of Savage showing up on a black card. I've seen Adrian Adonis showing up on a black card, and he was deceased by then, so I guess they had some left over.
Well, also, because it said Wrestling Superstars 89, right, which makes it a little weirder that here's someone who died the previous year on a Wrestling Superstars 89 card.
Exactly. Beefcake, Stud, they make sense, because the Beefcake's labeled, the Barber, Stud, of course, had come back, but Adonis is a little strange, yeah.
So since I was saying, I want to talk a little bit about, like, foreign exclusives and stuff like that. So one of the things, to me as a kid, one of the things I did know about was with WCW's action figures from Galoob, that they had a second series that was exclusive to the UK, and it had repaints of everyone from the first series, and it also added a few new guys. It was, let me see if I can remember, Dustin Rhodes, El Gigante, Big Josh, Freebirds. I feel like I'm missing one or two.
No, that's it. And then they did the, in addition to the repaints, they did Luger and Sting and Rhodes.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was it.
Yeah, and then that Sting, of course, became what looked to be the inspiration for a later Toymaker Sting in the exact same outfit, the exact same pose. That was always strange.
But, same color, same colors too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exact same color. Sting's hair was a little bit browner to match the, you know, the time of that figure's release, but other than that, yeah, Big Josh is still the hardest to find, it seems like, especially with that stick, the axe handle. I mean, no one has that. It's gone. All the British children lost it. But the prices have really come down as far as loose examples with the Freebirds and Dustin and Gigante. I just picked up some Freebirds. I had never owned any of the exclusive, the second series. This is the second series. But they're really cool. I think it's the best Hayes figure that was ever done as far as likeness.
Yeah, those all had really good likenesses, though. All the glued stuff. And they were, you know, they're a little strange because they're in scale with the Hasbros, but they're kind of made similar to the LJNs, but they're made of a harder kind of, I guess, not, like, kind of in between rubber and plastic is almost the way they feel. But,
yeah.
So they were a little strange to play with as a kid, but they were all pretty nice looking.
Yeah, and I loved them because, I mean, you had guys that had left the WWF, Anderson, Wyndham, Butch Reed, Tom Zenk, and, you know, suddenly, you know, here's some competition for your Hasbro. And Flair, Flair's Hasbro didn't come out until he was gone from WWF. So, you know, you had a Flair for his whole run while he was there as the real world's champion.
Yeah, it didn't really, well, and it didn't really look like him, the Hasbro one either.
No, when I first opened the magazine up and they had the big two-page spread with The Undertaker and all the '93
Yeah, Undertake them all.
I thought it was Dino Bravo. I said, why are they making Dino Bravo? It was Flair.
Yeah, I'm looking at on eBay, like, some of the UK Galoobs, and you've got then you got that Ric Flair, which has the weird Lightning Express trunks for some reason.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Arn had, I think, the solid red in that series. Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you know about why these only came out overseas?
Again, as far as I know, it was just because they didn't sell well here. The Galoobs came out almost exactly at the same time as the Hasbros, and I guess between kids probably knowing the WWF people a little bit more than they did the WCW people, and the fact that the Hasbros moved, and as you said, the WCW didn't, I think they were probably looked at as the Galoobs were looked at as a cheaper counterpart. You know, nowadays, and even, you know, then, I knew different, but a lot of kids probably didn't. They probably said, who are these? And the Hasbros obviously had more colorful costumes because of the differences between the WWF and WCW at the time. Although what was cool was the WCW's all had belts. You had to buy the ring to get the WWF belt.
Yep. Now, one of the things I always found kind of weird about really all of the WCW merchandise at that time, and it wasn't just action figures, although it was most noticeable with the action figures. Everything had, except for those UK figures and the stuff, the prototypes that came out later, the guys that didn't come out, like Ricky Morton and PN News and Black Blood, of all people, they were all the same 12 guys. Like, most notably, when Just Toys came out with their WCW, first they were called Twistables before Just Toys started using the Bendham's name for all of their lines.
Right.
It was the same exact 12 wrestlers, and some of them were a little weird, like Lex Luger, who had a belt, which was just a belt. I mean, you know, it wasn't removable, but it was just a belt you would wear with your pants above his trunks.
The workout belt, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was just the same 12 guys, and then if you looked at other stuff that came out around the same time, like, because like WWF at that time, WCW, not as widespread, but they had all of a sudden start to have a lot of merchandise in stores. Like, all sorts of weird little things. And again, it was the same guys. Like, you know, so we got, you know, Sting, Luger, Flair, Arn, Sid, Wyndham, Steiners, Doom. I think I said just about everyone. Oh, Pillman and Zack.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Like, if you looked at other stuff, like, one of the things I remember getting at, I believe it was at a Lionel Playworld store. Which Playworld and Kitty City were always my favorite toy stores. I don't know what it was, just something about they carried like different stuff from everyone else, from KB and Toys R Us.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
They had, and it was this like WCW play money with the wrestlers' faces on it. And again, same guys. Like if you know, no one lower down the card than Doom or Pillman and Zank. Like, do you have any idea what the deal with that was? Like, did they have a certain number of guys that signed a certain licensing agreement? Like, what was up with that? And did you notice that, too?
Yeah, if you look at, there's a card game from that time. It's almost like in a board game box, a WCW card game. The money, like you said, that was part of the rack toys that they would sell. I have an air horn that has Sting and Flair on it from that time. You squeeze it right in the package.
Yeah. I think I had that board game too. And also, the watches, the digital watches that had the Galoo styled guys.
The watches. Then there was the. I think there was like even like a dart game, a dart board kind of game.
Yeah.
I think it was just that was what WCW. It may have been at a WCW level with who they had signed for as far as merchandising, but as far as the companies, I think that's all the WCW supplied them as far as reference materials because there is a certain set of photos, and I think it's the ones they actually used for the cards on the figures, the main photo. There's a certain series of reference photos that only those 12 guys are on, so that's probably part of it. That's all they had to. Really go by, and that's really all who was, I guess there was a few more being pushed at the time, but those were the steady 12. I guess they didn't want to dive into guys, that Tommy Rich, who was kind of being past his prime by then, Junkyard Dog was unreliable, so, just trying to pull some people out of 1990 WCW, but, right.
They also had the two different sets of trading cards, which I think had a few more guys, but were about the same selection of wrestlers.
Yeah, Ricky Morton, Tommy Rich, Missy was in them, Jim Ross, and yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Who was the one, like, near job guy level wrestler that was on the one with the color? I forget, it was Impel, and what was the other brand?
Impel did the
Championship.
Championship.
I think the one with the black and the gold stars, I think
the
was
black
championship.
And gold, championship, I think it was.
But there was someone else in the Impel line, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was like a...
Impel had Dutch. Dutch was in there.
Yeah, Dutch. That's who I was thinking
Dutch
of.
Yeah, Dutch Mantel, yeah. And he had some in the other one, too. He had a couple cards in the other line, too, yeah. I mean, he would have been a great figure. He didn't get a figure until Zeb Coulter, but... Yeah, I guess it had some. You're probably right. It had something to do with who they had signed up for merchandising deals. Of course, a lot more people got stuff through the catalog. There was a shirt called Survey. I mean, Captain Mike Rotunda.
And to be clear, he's talking about boat captain Captain Mike, not Varsity Club Captain Mike.
Right, with his head sticking out of the boat. It was the most bizarre piece of merchandise. Well, not the most. I can't say that, but it's pretty bizarre.
Yeah, all those old WCW catalog shirts are very hard to find.
Oh, yeah,
Anything catalog or live show exclusive.
Oh, yeah, the foam fingers, the shirts. And earlier, it seemed like between 85 and 88, when Crockett still, before he sold out, they loved bandanas. The bandanas were the thing. I have Four Horsemen, the Four Horsemen bandana is awesome. It has Ole on it, anything is always awesome, but the Four Horsemen bandana, they did the superpowers. Everybody had a bandana. I mean, did people really wear them? Or?
Well, WWF had a lot of bandanas, too.
Yeah. I mean, I got the one bandana from the cable company. Somebody asked on Twitter about the cable company giveaways. I think I got one of them through them. It was just the WWF logo with blue and white.
So, I mean, how many different... Yeah, since someone asked, how many different cable company things were there, and are those hard to find? Are they sought after at all?
Yeah, some of them seem to be exclusive to the cable company giveaways, and other ones were just stuff that I guess they couldn't sell at the house shows or through the catalog because, I got the Razor's Gold chain, BB chain through the cable company. I got a SummerSlam 93 package once. You actually had the program, sunglasses. The thing about the stuff like that is not a lot of people know about it. So if it goes up on eBay and they're not searching for it, it might go for a lower price, than really what somebody might pay for it. I find that all the time when I put something on Twitter or Facebook or even the blog and somebody's like, oh my God, I never knew that existed. I'm like, yeah, well, it was on eBay 2 weeks ago, but you really have to search. And a lot of times, because nobody's looking, they pass it right up. I shouldn't be giving my secrets away, but that's how to get it, the rare stuff.
Right, and there was also the Coliseum video stuff, which you had two types of Coliseum video gifts. You had the stuff that was shrink wrapped to the tape, which I'm guessing most are going to be pretty much impossible to find unless you can find a shrink wrap tape, which is also hard to find because those were priced for rental. Most regular people weren't buying those. So I think most of those were just thrown out by the stores.
Yeah, they were given away, like you said. But
they had ones that were specifically for rental giveaways, which I never saw anywhere. And they pushed those a lot on TV and at the beginning of the tapes, like the beginning with Todd Pettengill, he'll tell you like, hey, you were supposed to get one of these. If you rented this tape, you should go back and kind of yell at them if they didn't give it to you.
Exactly. I lucked out on those because at least two different video stores that I knew of, I would go in and they would see me renting. Well, they were all, you know, probably minimum wage workers. They didn't really care about giving them to each customer. So I would go and be renting the tapes and they'd say, oh, you like this wrestling stuff? Here, have all this. And at least twice I was just handed the whole inventory of the bookmarks and, you know, all that, the paper materials and all that giveaway stuff that you were supposed to get, the little posters and... Yeah, so I really did luck out with that stuff. And as far as the shrink-wrapped items, it was about 15 years ago, a bunch of shrink-wrapped tapes surfaced on eBay, and that was before people were paying big bucks for the shrink-wrapped tapes. Like, nowadays, a Stoll Sealed Coliseum video or turntable will go for a ton. Back then, it was pretty much the same level as if it was open.
Are you talking about that one seller that had, like, a ton of them?
There was,
including,
yeah,
like, the... It was like all Coliseum videos and WWC Puerto Rico stuff. That guy.
I can think of one of his name was Cantina 00.
Yes,
you remember that? That was his name. Yeah, and I got I have a Coliseum video, Fly Swatter that was shrink wrapped, bookmark. I never did get the little metal. I think they were for the Rumble. They were little like metal. They almost look like belt buckles. Maybe they were. I don't know. I never did get those, but I got a bunch of that stuff off of him. And you're right; it doesn't surface anymore. Very rarely surfaces.
I only had one, which was my dad at work somehow got a shrink wrapped copy of Hulkamania 6 that he brought home, which had, I think it was like just a WWF Coliseum video logo ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, only time I ever saw any of them anywhere. I mean, like I just looked up now, I just searched Coliseum video gift. And we got a sealed copy of Hulkamania 6 with the ruler. And it's at $750 on a buy it now. So some Coliseum videos aren't going for a lot sealed then, but.
No, yeah, and especially since the network. I mean, unfortunately, that's hurt it a lot. I mean, for collectors anyway, but.
What am I seeing right now? This is a Coliseum video logo. What is this? Is it supposed to be a medallion or something? I don't know.
Is it black and silver? Or?
Yeah, black with silver on it.
That might be the little bookmark I have. Yeah, that sounds like that. Yeah, I can't even remember what tape it was attached to, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are probably just a lot of these that just aren't going to show up just because they would have gotten thrown out or whatever. And I mean, I think you'd have to check, and outside of looking at WWF Magazine with the ad, you're probably not even just going to find what they were supposed to be.
Right. And that goes back to what I always say about collecting wrestling stuff is there is no great, you know, database of all this stuff out there. A lot of it's still a mystery. I mean, I've been collecting this stuff for almost 30 years and I'm still shocked about what surfaces from, you know, the 80s. It's understandable because it was primitive back then, but you'd think all the 90s, 2000s, even today's stuff would be cataloged. It's not. I mean, there's always stuff out there saying, when did this come out? Where was this released? And that's what makes it so much fun.
Yeah, you just have a couple subsets of collectors who track everything. You've got the action figure collectors, the home video collectors, trading cards, and am I forgetting anyone? I mean, T-shirts, you don't really have anything central, like kind of anyone who's tried to list them. That's about it. And the trading card thing has fascinated me over the years. And I say this like right now, and looking at the Coliseum video stuff, someone has gotten a Coliseum collector's card from 93 of WrestleMania 3 PSA graded that they're trying to sell. And I guess now we're coming in on it being closer to like 10 years. This has been a thing. I mean, it was started like 5-10 years ago.
Grading?
Grading and also just the cards becoming worth anything anyway. I guess... Really, I think it started with me, I don't know if I looked them up or whatever, the All-Star Wrestling cards from, what was it, 81, 82, which were, I think, made by Norm Keitzer's magazine to be sold to WWF shows, but then they weren't sold at WWF shows because they were too heavy on non-WWF guys. And I think back to about 20 years ago, at least, and I don't know how long this lasts, actually maybe a little less. Like, I remember Sheldon Goldberg was selling, you know, full factory sets of those in Matt Marketplace for like $10 each. And now, good luck getting a single card for $10.
Right. Yeah.
Even if it's not graded or anything.
On some of those sets. I remember those sets being available, you know, like you said, like 10, 15 years ago, and just maybe even sooner than that. I mean, yeah. And the thing is, they're not pretty cards by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, they're the same photos that were used on those same publications, you know, time and time again, the wrestling reviews and the programs, but, you know, they have the value. That's, you know, people are after them. It's what's in demand now.
What happened, though, that all of a sudden they became in demand? Like, what? And, like, people wanting a wrestler's rookie card, so to speak. Like, how did it all of a sudden become a thing a few years ago that wrestling trading cards became part of the card collector community like any regular sport?
As far as them becoming part of the regular sports card community, I'm not sure, because I never got into the regular sports cards heavily. But you hit it right on the head with it's a lot of their rookie cards, you know. And even earlier than that, some people count the quote-unquote cards that were in some of the early After magazines, the Wrestling Superstars. And really, you had to cut them from the page. It was just paper. But I sold one of those issues myself for $250. You know, I had an extra one. So, you know, and people will somehow meticulously cut them from the magazine and then send them off to get graded, and bam, they're making $250 from one card. So, I mean, I'm not too high on grading myself. I have nothing graded in my collection, and if I did, I'd probably crack it open with a hammer. But I've had a friend who cracked something open with a hammer that he bought graded. It wasn't very, very much, but he needed an autograph. He wasn't going to get autographed in the little thing, so he hammered it right open. But, you know, there's a lot of people, they won't collect anything that isn't graded. And they'll grade anything these days, from cards to a loose action figure can be graded.
Yeah, it's just so weird to see, but I just don't get what the catalyst was. Like, all of a sudden, how did they become so sought after? Was it just a community just kind of slowly built up around them?
Yeah, I guess it was all about the rookie cards. Andre was in there, technically, as far as a card, a cardboard card, trading card. Andre, Hogan, Flair. There may have been a few things from Japan that were earlier, but as far as the collectors are concerned, it says All-Star cards. There's three sets of All-Star cards.
Yeah, it's just so strange to see, because it was like, it was always just on the outside of that kind of thing of being collectible. I mean, they were never really like that, any kind of wrestling cards. And now you even see with the stuff like from, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like, they're not as desirable, but stuff that, you know, I'm sure you saw all the time like I did, like the Topps 1987 WWF cards. Like, people getting them graded, and if it's graded, selling it for more, you know, depending on who it is, of course. But, you know, I mean, so many of these were around. You could get either a full set cheap, or you could buy, you know, sealed packs, but, you know, those, you might get identical packs sometimes, you know, but for years and years after they were originally available, that they were, you know, they were like, I'd compare them to like the common baseball cards that you can get in vending machines, you know?
They were. Exactly. They were, you know, they were, in the dime bin at the flea market, you know, the sports sellers didn't want anything to do with them. And, you know, now they're going after them. Even Topps recognized it, because Topps, I would say about a year, maybe 2 years ago, they put all like the printing press cards from those old 87 cards, they were all up on eBay. So with their little certificate of authenticity. So even Topps is recognizing it. And I wish Topps would do a heritage WWF set in that 87 style. But that's my own personal wish there.
Yeah, my personal favorites of any of the, I mean, at least the American wrestling cards that I've had were always those championship WCW cards, though, in terms of like the photo quality and everything. Those were really, really nice.
They were. They had the nice gloss to them, and like we were saying before, they came out right at the same time as the Impel, and you saw the Impel were mass marketed, and they were, to be honest, they were ugly. And they had the same cards. You'd get like five Stings in a row, five Ricky Mortons, whereas the championship ones, they had action, well, that was the action shots, but you're right, the photography was just so much better chosen, and then you had the awesome Four Horsemen card, and much better set of the two.
Yeah, and I was talking about Lionel Playworld earlier, how Playworld, which was their smaller, I'd say closer to KB type store, just in terms of size, and they also had Kitty City, which was their Toys R Us equivalent, and how they had different stuff. Like, one of the things that I remember seeing on the shelves at Playworld, which I didn't get, was, I believe it was a factory full set of the championship cards that was, like, in a blister pack. But I think it was every card.
Oh, wow.
I mean, at the very least, it had a lot more than a single pack would. But I think it was just the factory set. And I never... I don't think I've ever seen that online or anything.
No, I haven't either. That you're right. The guy didn't have the little smaller version, but we had some Kitty Cities, and they always had some stranger stuff. Maybe they made some deals for some less produced items. You never know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it was just it. They always just had different things than your KB or your Toys R Us. And just really, it was, I guess, right around as I started going to toy stores more or whatever, as I got a little older. And when I say a little older, I'm talking about, I don't know, 7 years old is when Lionel, well, I guess the train company, the parent company stuck around, but they got rid of all the stores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that was kind of unfortunate. I guess, it wasn't as big, you know, a personal loss, but are all the KBs gone now?
Yeah, as far as I know. I think they went into, they just had a couple of KB, I can't remember what they would call them. It was
KB Outlet.
The outlets. And they were just clearing houses, and then after that, I never saw another one again.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of just, in terms of everything, whether it was video games or anything else, they just kind of declined a lot over the years.
And like I said, they bought out Circus World. We had Circus World, which is where I saw the black card at LJN's, and yeah, down they went. Yeah. Down they went. Toys R Us is all that's left.
Yeah, here the one near me actually got replaced by a Toys R Us Express, which at first was supposed to be a seasonal thing, but then I guess it did well enough that it stuck around.
Right, yeah, I've seen a few of those too, yeah. Yeah, our outlet's gone, though, and I think just there was no market anymore. Amazon killed everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we don't have a Walmart like around here because I'm in New York. So there's no real. There's like maybe one that's kind of a little far flung, but otherwise, you know. So toy stores weren't hurt here as much as they were everywhere else, but because they were hurt everywhere else, you know. We may still have one of the two Toys R Us's around here, but when I say around here, it's, you know, within like half hour, 40-minute drive. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
One of the things I want to talk to you about, because this is definitely a mutual interest, at least one of the things I still try to collect a little bit is, if I can, you know, find them, I don't like to spend too much money on them, is wrestling-related vinyl. Like, I saw a little bit of the stuff you had collected that you posted on your blog, and, like, I've just got a couple things that, like, I have a Jimmy Hart We Hate School 45 that I got a nice deal on eBay. I have the original release of Pile Driver, Wrestling Album 2, which I got sealed, you know, again, you know, decent price. And I also have the 12-inch singles from the first Wrestling Album, which I don't think people are that aware of. And may actually be of all of the WWF albums, I think those 12 inches are actually the best things they put out musically.
Yeah, are you talking about they did the Land of a Thousand Dances with the cover with Orndorff and for that one?
Yeah, and also the 12-inch of Grab Them Cakes, and especially the Grab Them Cakes one, I think is actually, I think the remixes that they have on there, I think I actually like them. I think they're actually pretty good.
See, I don't have that one. I have a 12-inch of Real American with a blank, you know, no colorful jacket, you know.
Yeah, you can find retail promos of Land of a Thousand Dances and Grab Them Cakes.
Yeah, I don't have the 12-inch of Grab Them Cakes. I have the 45. with him and Vicky C. Robinson on the cover and the cake on the back.
Yeah.
That was one of the first ones I got, I think, years and years ago.
Yeah, if you look at, I don't know if they're always on eBay, but they, you should be able to find them, find it on Discogs if it's not on eBay.
Hmm. I'll have to look in. I did not. I did a 12-inch grab and take. See, I'm learning stuff. Yeah.
Now, did you pick up the re-release they did for Record Store Day of Wrestling Album Piledriver?
I didn't. I'd heard about it beforehand, and I was like, when am I going to get this? I can't even think of it. I mean, in Pittsburgh, in the actual city of Pittsburgh, there are record stores, and I imagine they had it, but I'm in the suburbs, so that's kind of a trek for me.
Yeah.
But I did see it on eBay. It seemed like it was going for around $45, and I don't know what it retailed for originally, or if it sold that, if it was one of the things, you know, people hoarded, and then, so I haven't gotten it yet. I know it's in red and yellow vinyl. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it looks cool. It's something I'd like to pick up somewhere along the line.
Okay. I believe it was, like, retailing for about 40. Yeah, it was 40. Because if you want to get it, Bull Moose, which is a independent record store that has a website that'll, you know, ship wherever, they have it for, I think it's 30, yeah, it's $38 with free shipping.
Oh, wow. There's a deal. Yeah. No reason to go to eBay on that one, then.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. There weren't too many people trying to gouge with that on eBay, though.
That's good. That's good because collectors should have it. You know, there's so many records out there and people wrestling records and people don't know about them, like the Jimmy Hart record. I mean, Outrageous Conduct. For years, you know, I had the magazines that had the order blanks in them, but I never saw one anywhere. So I said, "Did that really ever come out?" And then a couple of years ago, I found out. I did, because I found one. I've actually owned two since then of the WWF release. And then there's the Memphis release with the Jerry Lawler cover art on it.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. That is, I would say that's got to be the most obscure of the WWF releases, because you cannot, there's not a lot of information on it at all, because it wasn't a retail release. And it just, I don't think, that's one of those things, like if you look at a site like Discogs, I don't think there's even a listing for it. I think there might be for the Memphis version, but yeah, I mean, for those who don't know, Jimmy Hart put out an album called Outrageous Conduct first when he was in Memphis, and then they re-released the exact same album with, it was with Epic Records. It wasn't like WWF did it completely in-house, but they did it with a new cover with him in a WWF ring with WWF logos on the turnbuckles in, when was it, 85, 86?
86 or 87, yeah.
Yeah, and that...
between that.
Yeah, and it's just that one's really, really hard to find. I mean, you have to really be looking for it actively. And I mean, that's one of the, I think that's up there in terms of just overall, like, of things that people are aware of, holy grails. To at least maybe there aren't a lot that many people collecting it, but because it's in the record realm where people have an idea what's rare, even if they're not into the specific genre. So it's not like it's not necessarily something you could find a great deal on.
Right. Like I said, it took me 20-some years to find. I think he, because I had him sign it, I think he said it was only released in Canada. I guess he's talking about as far as a retail release.
Maybe.
Because it did appear in the magazines here. You could order it. So at least in the USA, you could get it through the WWF magazine. Yeah, it's, like I said, it took me 20-some years to find. It has the one of the things I like about it is it has the WWF logo on the back, and inside the logo is a picture of the Jimmy Hart LJN figure, which I thought was kind of cool. Not something they did a lot of then. And yeah, it's the exact same album as he did in Memphis about 6 or 7 years earlier, roughly. And the original one has cartoon art based on Memphis and just some of the titles of the songs, and it was drawn by Jerry Lawler. And when I had him signing his album, he mentioned to me about that, and I said, yeah, you drew it, you know, so he was kind of shocked that I knew about that. He said that, Jerry said that he released about 20 different singles in total.
As far as with, associated with the promotion, I mean, that doesn't sound too far-fetched if you think about all, over all the years, you know, Lawler had a bunch, Hart had a bunch, they had the Jimmy Valiant, at least one or two Jimmy Valiant singles, Jackie Fargo had a song. Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right. I mean, you know, and anyone who's interested in these, definitely get Jim Cornette and Mark James' first book that they did together, Rags, Paper, and Pins, which is, right, no, Rags, Paper, and Pins.
Rags, Paper, and Pins.
Rags, Paper, and Pins, which is all about the Memphis territory merchandise, has about the records, has about programs, and just because they were all the stuff they sold, because they were just way ahead of everyone else with the gimmick table. And, you know, even when they kind of scaled things down later on, they always had the gimmick table with the photos and stuff. And it has a reprint of every single issue. I think, what was it, there were five or six that Jim did of the Territories Championship Wrestling magazine. It's a very, very cool book that you can get on Amazon.
Yeah, it is. It is. Mark, and everybody knows Jim Cornette, but Mark James is a great guy. And I think his site is MemphisWrestlingHistory.com, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his books are great. Honestly, the even though Rags, Paper, and Pins is about the merchandise, I mean, it's almost a history of the territory, too. I mean, it goes back to Sputnik Monroe and Jackie Fargo and all them. And then, you know, Cornette fits right into it. I won't spoil it because I want you to buy the book to support them. But Cornette fits right into the gimmicks of the time. Let's put it that way. The photos and the magazine, like you said, the program, the magazine. And, yeah, it's great. It's well worth the money.
Okay, so I did look up Outrageous Conduct on Discogs. At least now there's an entry for, we've got three different versions. So the original one from Rockin' Wrestlin' Records, in which actually lists is 85, but that sounds like a mistake. And it lists as 86,
probably,
cassette
yeah.
and LPs from Epic Records, which it does list as coming out in Canada.
Okay, yeah, that's the WWF one then, yeah, and I would say that one would have more appeal to the modern collector because it has, you know, Jimmy in the WWF ring right on it. It's a WWF, like you said, it's a WWF licensed product. It thanks Vince McMahon on the back. So, but the cover for the Memphis one is a little bit funnier. It's pretty humorous.
Yeah, especially if you're someone who likes Jerry Lawler's artwork.
Right, and that whole time period, the Lawler, and there'll be a lot of interest coming back into that because of the Lawler DVD release tomorrow. So
yeah, there probably will be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like to at some point get maybe a couple more of the Jimmy Hart ones, especially the one I would want more than any other would be Lance Russell's nose.
Oh yeah,
that's always been my favorite. But mm-hmm. but we hate school's a close second.
Yeah, that one I have the 45 of. Yeah, and yeah. He was great, Jimmy. I mean, he brought something different. You know, everybody talks about rock and wrestling, you know, in 85, but really kind of he was doing it earlier, you know?
Yeah.
He was doing it before WWF was.
Yeah. So we're talking about Holy Grails a little bit, or at least I was, and I was thinking about a couple things, like at least for me, and I'll kind of ask about these, but then also kind of what for you, if you did or didn't find it, would be yours. Like, occasionally, I'll just still look for the heck of it. For me, one of them was always the videotape release of the first Crockett Cup, which was maybe available for a month or two. And it's like there are two different versions: one that had cover art, one that was in a plain case with an insert, but I think was verified as actually being real. And for some reason, I don't know why, if it had to do with them working with Mid-South and on that card and then things kind of ending badly between them or what, but it was available for such little time that if you look at like the back issues of The Observer from 87, I think it's pretty early in the year that there is a Reader's Pages entry of Dick Bourne looking to get a copy. Not a, you know, when I say a copy, you know, the original release, and being willing to pay for like a large amount of money for it. So that's within maybe 6 months or less of it being released that it was already impossible to get. I don't know how long they had the ads for it, but I mean, what do you know about that one?
Very little. I remember, you know, some of the Crockett Cups were released by Turner, but was that one even released by Turner?
No, that and Starrcade 85 are the two that were released by, I used to know the name and now I can't remember, but it wasn't Turner Home Entertainment.
Right. And I know there was, there was two releases on one of the early Starrcades, I want to say also.
Am I crazy? Well, no, it's because there were two different ones of 85.
Okay, yeah.
There was one that had a weird monochromatic, like, pink-tinted cover.
The pink, yeah, that's
which
the
was
one I'm
like
thinking
two,
of, yeah.
Which was the longer one, it was like 2 hours, and then there was a full-color one in a slipcase, in a slipcover that was shorter.
Yeah, and the Starrcade prices, from what I've seen, I haven't, you know, paid too much attention to what I've seen have gone down, of course, obviously because of the network. But, you know, the clock had come far on there, so it may never be for various reasons. So, but as far as I'm not sure about the distribution of those, they were so Crockett was so everywhere, you know, this place, that place, as far as merchandising, that just, you know, they ended up doing near the end. I mean, they looked like they were on the right track with the Wonderama cards, and Wonderama was supposed to produce all these other things, a lunchbox, and looked like they were getting there. And then, of course, you know, they sold out. But before that, it was bandanas and shirts and. I mean, there's several programs for the same event. You know, there's certain bashes and bunkhouse stampedes. They're different. You know, there's a Kaiser program, and then there's an in-house program. Mm-hmm. You know, what was sold where? It's very murky, unfortunately, the history of it. No one really seems to know the truth, and I'm sure that's what goes with the tapes also.
Yeah, there's one of Crockett Cup 86 on eBay. It's a buy it now for $499.95, and it's the one that doesn't even have the professional cover. But I'm pretty sure my understanding is it's real. I mean, it's weird though. I mean, it's like the official cover on the one that had it was just like, I think, a picture of the trophy with the logo and everything. And then this one is just, you know, if you've ever seen, you know, a case like kind of like the type, I guess, that would be used professionally, like in house by, you know, where it has the little plastic sleeve, like in the middle of the cover of the front.
Yeah.
It's that type of thing. It just has like a typed thing in there and on the label. It's not something you would expect from, you know, a company that had national television back then. But
they were likely probably just sold at events. You know, they produced them quickly and threw them out there. And
yeah,
what the picture quality is like. You know, I'd wonder about that too. I'd love to see them just to see that. You know,
yeah, it was Presidential Square Marketing is the name.
Sounds like a little company Crockett would have went with, in the Carolinas or somewhere thereabout.
And one of the other things that's pretty much impossible to find these days is the George Steele Mine stuffed animal. Do you have one of those?
Mm-hmm. I do. that's one of the most talked about things I have. And it's actually, when I got into really collecting the rare items, I always set a price at $75, no more. You know, that is what I would pay for something, and usually I got nowhere near it. I would usually get really cheap because I'd look and, you know, hunt around. Well, that wasn't working for mine. Mine was always, there were always stories, oh, I found it at a thrift store, or, you know, Goodwill, somewhere like that. Well, it never happened for me. So about a little over a year ago, I was alerted to an auction. It was an auction, but it had a buy it now of $200 for mine, and I pulled the trigger. And so I do own a mine. my friend has a mine that he got as a child, I guess through the catalog. His parents got it for him, and Steele offered him like $600 for it at Charlotte Fan Fest one year. So I'm not sure if he doesn't have one anymore. I have a photo with Steele with a mine, but it was before I got my mine. So it's not mine. That mine isn't mine. I don't think that was his either. I think that was someone that the promoter knew that, so I don't know if George has one or not, but yes, I do have one. That was one of my holy grails.
Yeah. Because I guess it's one of those things. It's a catalog item from the 80s. And, well, you know, I guess it was at live shows too, but most of that stuff just isn't sought after for, you know, it's a t-shirt or. And they have the mugs, and someone might be into that type of thing, but there's not going to be anything with as much interest as mine has.
Right, because he was, you know, even though it's essentially a prop replica, you know, exactly. You know, there was an original mine that was a little different, then they switched it to the one that the doll is based after. But, it's essentially an early prop replica, and it didn't last long on TV, so you got to think it didn't last long for sale either. And like I said, they show up at Goodwill a lot, so if anybody wants one, that's the place to look, and I hope you find one, because they do. It's one of the things that does, you know, get the value of the matches the demand. It does get those prices, because I saw one go after I got mine for $200. Like I said, it was a buy it now. I saw one go for $300 or $400 at an auction, so it's one of the things that does retain its value.
And it does make sense that it would show up at Goodwill's because it was a stuffed animal. I mean, if it's someone's not holding on to it, it's going to go, you know, it's going to get donated with all their other stuffed animals.
Mm-hmm. And they don't know. I mean, Goodwill sometimes, especially nowadays, tries to figure out what they have and see if they can get more money for it. But that's one thing I don't think they would. They'd say, oh, this is from some cartoon.
You're
something.
Not going to know
they
what
would
it
never
is.
Know.
Yeah.
You're never going to know it's a sports collectible. So, yeah. So that, yeah, I do like mine. He's a good little guy.
Now, was it Jax or Mattel? I think it was Jax that was going to make a little plastic mine to go with Steel, but they didn't end up releasing it, right?
Right. Jax, it was at Toy Fair with the George Steel. It looked like it was going to be like a Bendy almost. Mm-hmm. And then Mattel ended up releasing it with their figure. And
So Mattel did end up releasing one.
Mattel did end up releasing it. And it was in 2010. And I remember that because it's very interesting because at the Walmart that I bought the figure at, my cashier was the now deceased wrestling women's legend, Donna Christianella. So she rang up my figure with mine. Yeah.
That's an odd moment. It reminds me like almost of what was it when Jim Ross was coming back from Japan in January that the tick gate agent was Jimmy Suzuki, I think.
Oh.
Whatever that story was, like that, I think.
I don't remember that one.
I think it was Jimmy Suzuki. It was one of the photographers. Well, it makes sense because he was the one who lived in the U.S. So,
right.
I think he lives in Detroit now, and Ross's layover was in Detroit, and like he happened to meet him at bumping into him at the airport.
Oh wow! You never know where wrestling is going to take you in the stories. I mean, we could do a whole show on my stories from the convention. There's enough stories there that, yeah. It's
so
a crazy business.
What were your other holy grails besides mine, and which of them have you been able to get?
The Jimmy Hart album. Another one was I always wanted a Kerry Von Erich autograph. And I don't know if it exists, but I always wanted a signed Kerry Von Erich Hasbro. Now, he came out about 8 months, I'd say roughly, before he died. He did do a lot of signings in that time. He did a very well-known one in Philadelphia prior to a show. And the footage is on YouTube. He appeared under a mask but was still wearing the Kerry jacket. He was like Woman's Prize in a match. And they did a convention before the show. I want to say it was Joel Goodhart or somebody along those lines running this thing.
It was Legends of Wrestling, which was, I'm trying to remember if it was maybe John Clark was involved.
Okay. Yeah. Some of those Eastern names that you always heard back then.
Yeah.
He did that signing. I have at least one. Now I own, essentially, the point of the story is I own 5 Kerry autographs now. Because I've gotten, like in the past 2 years, at very cheap prices and they're all authentic from various X-Fans. But the first one I got is actually from that show. So it's possible, you know, if someone thought of it, which back then I've heard from fans who were collecting autographs, and they never thought to get figures signed. But it's possible someone may have taken a Kerry Hasbro to get signed at that show or any other signs. There was another signing at the time that was in WWF Magazine, late 92. They actually showed him. So who knows if someone had one there. But even though I didn't end up getting a signed Kerry figure, I do have 5 signed Kerry photos. I actually got a Chris Von Erich autograph, which I've never seen anywhere else. I actually have the whole family with David now. So, there's a lot of old Texas fans who, you know, you always saw them signing in the ring, and you know how fan-friendly they were, that have these autographs, and I've managed to get my hands on some of them. So that was a holy grail Kerry, because he was my favorite Von Erich. So, yeah. I always wanted the rare Rock and Wrestling Eraser figures, which I'm sure you know about.
Right. Because for those who don't know, when they had the Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling cartoon, the only merchandise they really released of the cartoon, well, there might have been some stickers or something, but as far as things that in the toy-ish realm was, they put out fairly big erasers that were, most of them were based on the LJN WWF figures, but there were a few that weren't, that looked like the cartoon characters, which I think it was Piper, Junkyard Dog, and Wendy Richter.
Right. They were, they're about the size of the, they're about the size, or some of them a little smaller, of the LJN Bendems that were released at the time. And, like you said, the only ones that really looked like the cartoon characters were Richter, Piper, and JYD. Then they did 2 different Hogans. Snuka and Sheik, they were all based off of the LJN look, but they were all on Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling cards. And they did, like you said, stickers. They did the color. My first item was the coloring book. That was my first wrestling item ever, trivia. And they did some tray puzzles, kitty-style items. Well, the only figures officially released, there is a guy now who's doing some nice statues. I don't know if he's going to sell them, but they're unlicensed. They're perfect. Of every character who appeared on there, they're really cool. But the only licensed figures were the Erasers. It's probably my favorite story. About 3 years ago, I decided to stop in this little vintage toy store that's on the south side. It was on the south side of Pittsburgh. I'd heard about it for 20 years. It had a female owner, and I'd always saw it on specials on TV, stuff like that. I never really got down to the south side of Pittsburgh. It's a little retail area by day. It's a night spot by night. I never got down there during the daytime. So one day after work, my work sent me out in that direction. I decided to go on down. I walked in. There was hardly anything wrestling. There was a little shoebox full of beat-up Hasbros and LJNs. I glanced through that, and I think there was an Andre the Giant t-shirt. Well, the clerk there, turned out to be the lady's husband, was talking to another customer. Like, I kind of wanted to say, do you have anything else wrestling in here? But he was talking on and on with this other guy. Thank God he was. I looked through the little shoebox again. I found this little green stocking foot sticking out. I said, what the hell is that? That's not a wrestling figure. Well, it was the Rowdy Roddy Piper Eraser, which even out of the package sells for, usually sells for a couple hundred dollars. So finally the guy was done with the other customer. I walked up, said hi, said, hey, how much is this? Oh, a dollar. no tax? No, just a dollar. Thank you so much. I could have floated home that day. I was so happy. And it turns out that after like 20-some years in business, they were closed the next month. So, they might have stayed in business a couple more months with that Piper, but their loss was my gain. That's one of my favorite stories. I love that little Piper. He's great.
I went on eBay and I looked up WWF Eraser just to see if any of them are really available right now. It seems like you mostly find Jimmy Snuka's and Hogan's.
Yeah.
But now one thing that showed up, though, someone listing right now, and they have it as a $45 buy an hour make offer, is Wrestler Eraser, which is it's a bootleg Hogan in the style of the Masters of the Universe type figures that were
knock
around.
Off. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. Yeah. they made knockoffs of a knockoff, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. Those. I have a soft spot for those because they were, I don't know if they came, I would think they came out before, or at least started to come out before the Hasbros, but were about the same size. And the reason I think they started to come out before the Hasbros is, well, maybe not all of them, but at least one of the lines that came out was sort of vaguely based on the first LJN WWF series, because you had a Hogan, because they all had a Hogan. And then you had what looked like an Iron Sheik, and it was pretty obviously between the head and the colored trunks, and he also had the two different colored boots. And then you had a sort of an Andre, a sort of a Snuka, and a guy who the one who had the least resemblance was the Big John Studd. But
right.
I don't know when that came out, but it must have, who knows with the people who make these toys, but I would think that must have come out closer, or at least originally come out closer to the mid-80s than to the early 90s.
They did. They also came out later. What they did was they would just keep remolding those molds, or the molds would get stolen or whatever. It was probably some foreign country, and who knows how. They probably weren't very closely guarded. God knows, whose hands they went through. And someone looking to make a buck, they kept remolding them. I remember seeing those, the ones you mentioned, the Snuka, Hogan, the LJN, quote-unquote, bootlegs. I can remember seeing newer versions of those, up until the Attitude Era. So, yeah. They just kept doing them.
And there were also the similar ones. There were also the similar ones that you could sort of pop the legs and arms on and off of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That came in all the different... And they all had, different colors of everyone that was in those, and... Those I got here at a store that was called Shane. And actually, the store still exists, Shane Circus of Values. And they were all, they were always a dollar each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously the companies weren't going to reproduce the heavy rubber of the LJN. So they did those. And they were honestly, if you think about it, they were like a cross between the LJN and the Remcos, the AWA Remcos. So, because since they were like the He-Man, and that was all, I think I saw some AWA run codes before I knew what they were, and I said, oh, those are knockoff wrestlers based off of He-Man. So.
And they had, and you know what? Although those bootlegs, or some of them, I guess you could call bootlegs, some just generic figures. Those you mentioned earlier with the WCW figures having belts, these all had belts too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There was the one I remember most is it's a thin little gray strap, and in the middle it has an eagle, and it obviously based off the 80s WWF design. Yeah, they did. They gave them accessories, and I mean, I remember some that had not as nice as the Remco clothing, but they had some clothing with like some vinyl vests and stuff. They may have been a little later, but they went in that direction, sure.
Yeah. The belts fell apart pretty easily. Like, if you were actually taking them on and off of your figures, they'd always, like, break first at, like, the buckle, for lack of a better term, and then also at the, whatchamacallit, at the, where the strap met the plate.
The medallion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the figures, they didn't last too many matches either. Some of them did, but...
Right, it was a matter of if, like, the arm would break off, would it break off too many times so that you couldn't get it to fit back on?
Right, exactly. But you had a snooker for the AWA, so that's what mattered.
So, don't have too much time left. Just a couple things I really wanted to ask you about before we finish up then. One of the topics near and dear to my heart is the LJN Stretch Wrestler figures, which... came out, what year did those come out?
87. Mm-hmm. Christmas of 87, they came out just in time.
And I had Roddy Piper that mm-hmm. my parents got me, I think that's for my birthday, and they were sort of in scale with the regular LJN figures, but they all, you know, they were Stretch Armstrong type toys, and they had cloth, you know, gear, which made them kind of unique, mm-hmm. and they've become some of the most collectible WWF toys, but it's for a few reasons, and it's kind of like, even if I had the money, I don't know if I would risk getting them, because
in the first place
they're hard to find. There were not a lot made. If you did get them and you played with it, it probably fell apart. That happened to any kind of Stretch Armstrong type figure usually, but these were not especially well put together, I mean, in terms of, like, the rubber quality. And for some reason, instead of, like, a leak you could plug, like, if it used, like, a corn syrup or whatever, like, these were filled with a powder that just spilled out. It was a little, as I recall, for, like, my sister was playing with my Roddy Piper, and she was, like, swinging him around, and his arms kept, like, you know, kind of twisting, and then, and he exploded. So... And I was talking with her, like, last year about it, and she decided she wanted to be nice and get me something to make up for it. You know, 20... Jeez, that was late. It was probably not long after they came out, so I was, like, 3, and she would have been, like, 8 or 9, or maybe 10. No, like, 9-ish. 8 or 9. And so she's looking on eBay, and she's like, oh my god, these are expensive. So she got me, you know how people are framing they'll frame ads from WWF Magazine?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So she got me the frame Stretch Wrestler ad. So that was
the nice. The Bundy getting stretched?
The Stretch Out All the Action one. I actually have it right here.
Oh,
with,
okay.
With Hogan and Savage. And it has most of them, actually. And Bundy's in the bottom, too, ID. So they're already hard to find. If someone played with it, it's pretty much a guarantee it's broken, and yeah, could be scuffed up and all that.
Right.
So at first you would think, okay, well, even though there weren't a lot made in the first place, if you could get a package, you know, one still in the package, you're fine. Well, the answer to that is no. As I learned when I was looking at these, when I was talking to my sister about it last year, they're apparently very sensitive to air pressure changes. A major change, like going in an airplane, like if you mail these and they go in a plane, they're pretty much definitely going to explode. There is, I don't know if he's still selling them. There was an eBay seller who had a set he had sold. I don't remember if he got reimbursed by the insurance, but the guy returned it to him because they all exploded at the knees.
Right. Canada. I think they were going to Canada, I think.
Yes, it was to Canada, and this was a full set. And he was selling them, basically saying, look, this is what happened. You get the boxes, you get most of the figure. I don't know if he ever had any takers. And I looked it up, and I think I found lots of stories of it happening with Stretch Armstrongs, even just in people's closets.
And I think it was mm-hmm. always that same spot, too, like where the knees of the legs would approximately be. So what can you tell me yeah. about these? And, like, what do you have in your collection and how well have they survived?
Well, all I have from the original 87 line is the Hulk Hogan box. I had Hogan and Bundy gone for Christmas 87. And for some reason, at a yard sale in 1990, I sold them. I don't remember how much I sold them for, and it would make me sick to know. So I don't have them anymore. What I do have, I had heard the story, though. I'd seen that auction. What I do have is they Just Toys released two stretch wrestlers. They were shorter, but they were the same, almost the same style material, same yep. cloth clothing of Bret Hart and Lex Luger in 1995. And I have the Bret Hart. And I had opened them, but I kept them so you could slide them right back in. And I kept them like that for a long time. And not too long ago, I discovered that, yeah, he kind of deformed at the knees also. Yeah, same place, ironically. And different companies, so I don't know why it happened. But they're going to be some of those toys that soon all we're going to have is the clothing and the heads, really, and the boots.
And the boxes.
And the boxes.
The boxes themselves of these are pretty nice to look at. I mean, there's something about them, the design and the way they have the pictures of the figures on it. They kind of evoke the memories of seeing the ads and stuff, and they're kind of, or having the figures or whatever. They're just, even the boxes are kind of cool to see. Like, I think I've seen people just selling the boxes for pretty decent money.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they had the plastic white trays in there, so right. If you have those, that would probably add on a little value. And I seem to remember they had some sort of plastic baggie on them. Maybe it was just one. I remember seeing my parents had bought JYD for my friends for Christmas, and I said, I want to open it and look at it and play with it. I seen them when there was plastic on the chain. I could be wrong, though. That was, mm-hmm. 28 years ago. But, yeah, so, the more you have, the more they're worth. I mean, there's a Stretch Armstrong, like, villain, snake, lizard type thing where the head is worth a couple $1,000 by itself. Monstars passed it up, but then it went for a bunch of money, so.
Right, it's from the original, like, 70s Stretch Armstrong, right?
Right, right. So, just the head for that, so some, as these LJNs get older, there's going to be less and less. And like you said, there's already few now. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like a full set, but, I'd be pretty upset if I paid a bunch of money and then, bam, I keep them safely stored and then they get destroyed. So it's a risk.
Yeah, I mean, really. I'm looking at them now on eBay. One of the auctions has in the title, or not, that's the little subtitle thing, adult-owned insured. So I think at least everyone caught on that you absolutely have to get insurance on these if you're selling.
Right, right. It's too risky.
Got the original price.
Like you said. Sorry?
Got the original price tag on at $9.99 at Hill's Department Store.
that's where I got mine, Hill's. I got everything at Hill, let me tell you. But yeah, and hopefully they're not insuring them for the original price either.
Yeah, it's very... It's weird that, like, I get physically that it would happen, and I get that it would happen in a plane. I just don't get why it's always in the same spot and how it could happen in someone's closet.
Yeah, my two, like I said, I had them about 3 years, not long enough, and they were fine. I played with them, but I remember my friend who we bought the JYD for had a George Steele, and they'd only come out a few weeks before Christmas, and by the time we gave it to him for Christmas, his George Steele was already leaking. So, I'll show you right there. It was weeks, a month, and they were already – that's probably why there wasn't a second series.
Yeah, it wasn't long. I mean, I did keep the I did keep the kilt pretty much until I didn't, I lost all my toys. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean I guess that was the only. I guess I didn't take Roddy Piper's trunks then, because the trunks would have had the trunks. But I don't know if that's a good.
They might have been painted on.
Right. I'm not sure.
I think so. I think it was a little blue paint.
Some of them were, some of them weren't.
Steamboats were cloth, I think. I know Bundy's singlet was cloth. I don't know about I had Hogan, and I can't remember if his trunks were paint or cloth. I don't remember the main cloth.
I think so. I've seen a Hogan. Well, it looks, I think it's cloth on the box, but I don't know if they actually were.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Steamboats. Or cloth, because there's a picture in one of the George Napolitano books of Steamboat Bonnie and the Little Dragon, Richie, in the hotel room, and Little Dragon is actually chewing on the stretch wrestler's foot in his cloth. So, so I know that one.
So last thing I wanted to ask you about was kind of a hybrid thing. It's sort of, because one of the things I've noticed that it seems like you've been picking up a fondness for, at least when you can find them, is press kits, and usually at conventions, it seems like. And
right.
So is this just something, like, is it something that you've started to look for after, like, you picked up the Pro Wrestling This Week one? And, like, what's kind of appealing to you about them? And, like, and what else have you, what else have you found at conventions that you just think you'd either never find online or would never think to look for online or whatever?
Sure. The press kits, I only got about 3 or 4 years ago, I would say, maybe 5 at the most. Somebody had listed, I don't even know what I was searching for, somebody had listed some of the WrestleMania ones, 1 through 6 on eBay. And they were reasonably priced. A few of them had the programs with them. I already had the programs, but the folders are just great. You can go on my Facebook or the blog. There's a blog entry about them. Anybody who wants to see them, maybe I'll redo them on Twitter one of these days. They just put so much effort into them. They all come seem to have the press releases, which of course, which you expect with the press kit. Other ones have a mishmash of photos. Some, like the WrestleMania 6 one, actually has a WrestleMania 6 promo photo. I've got an example of a WrestleMania 2 one that had just generic Savage, Hogan, and Orndorff promo photos, yet there are WrestleMania 2 promo photos out there, so I'm not sure how WWE or the marketing company divvied them up, but basically, I found them through WrestleMania 1 through 7. Then I know some of the late 90s, early 2000s events have them, and they're just such an interesting piece because they weren't sold. I'm guessing you had to be either at the press conferences or one of the various partners that they would mail them out to. The early ones have the listings of all the closed circuit locations. The matches and the appearances are generally on spot on, so it seems like they didn't. Well, back then they planned, you know, a lot further ahead. Everybody knows that. But like for WrestleMania 3, you know, you always hear, oh, Samantha Fox was announced to be there for the King of Crown match. Well, she's not listed in there, so obviously they did these much closer to the events. They're just cool, the looks. I mean, the covers have embossed logos in like a gold reflecting, some of them. They're just real.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
I think I can hear you now.
Oh, you're good? Okay.
Yeah, just you were just saying they just
cut out for a minute.
Yeah, just go back a little bit so that you were saying they just something about you're talking about the embossed
of them have the WrestleMania logos embossed on them. Some of them are glossy, like I said, some have the program, some don't. I did get some other ones. Off of the legendary Mark Madden, who's a fellow Pittsburgher of mine, I picked up one for the Lex Express tour. It has the Lex Express promo photo, which a gentleman in the United Kingdom offered me an eyeball for. He wants it that bad. it has a narcissist-looking promo, but it just says Lex Luger, and then it has the one that actually became the magazine cover once he turned face with the jeans and the famous Lex Luger pose. And then Mark Madden actually had a press photo from the Post-Gazette, which I think at the time was the Pittsburgh Press, of Luger's actual appearance here, where he rode some go-karts with his son. And so that's like, it's almost like a personal connection with them. They're unique or one of a kind, because even if somebody else has one, it may not have the same items inside. I also got a WCW one from Madden, and WCW was a little less into that kind of thing, so who knows how many they actually had at all. But when Hogan came around, I guess they decided to dive into it, because I have a Hulk Hogan one that covers both Dash of the Beach 95 and the Hulk Hogan's Wrestling Boot Band album. So that one's kind of a mishmash of just everything they wanted to put out about Hogan is right there. And as you mentioned, I deal with one from Pro Wrestling This Week with Joe Pedicino and Gordon Foley, and I picked it up from Gordon Foley's family at one of the Charlotte conventions. And that another thing he's gotten into was the conventions. You never know what you're going to find there. The Foley family was, not to disrespect him, but they just wanted the fans. They said they didn't want to go on eBay and have people buying it to resell it. So they would rather, for more money, so they would rather just sell directly to the fans at FanFest. They were letting things get very reasonable prices. I picked up that. Some of his personal programs, his last press pass from WCW, some of my favorite treasured items, and an actual autographed photo. They had very few of those. But I did get, I never saw that on a Gordon Sully autograph, but there it was. And this past year, I picked up the legendary Danger Zone calendar, which you probably know about because it was involved with the Danger Zone video release.
Yeah, I think it came with it. Although you never you see a ton of the video on eBay, but you never see the calendar.
Never see the calendar. And it's the cover is very appealing to most male fans because it's Missy Hyatt laid out in the sun. But the inside is more geared towards the female fans because you have you know, Michael Hayes in a very skimpy little Speedo and stuff like that. But the Missy Hyatt cover is really cool, and she was actually there that year, so I got her. She signed it, and she actually smooched it right on her picture, so it's got her lipstick on it. And that's a cool thing. Then they, Crockett, I guess they would have had a part in that because that was 88. They were ahead of their time. They put out merchandise to appear to the female fans. I have four different Ricky and Robert newsletters that have smooches and hearts all over them and, you know, just totally female-related items. I have last year I picked up this big, oversized Magnum TA program that, trust me, the photos were geared towards the female fan. That's all I will say about that. it goes back to what I said earlier. It's just, that's why I love this stuff. I mean, I grew up with it, but then as I grew to understand that you never know what you're going to find. It's never been cataloged. The Memphis stuff is with Jim Cornette and Mark James doing that. And there was a book in the Attitude Era, but it's a nice book to look at, but it's very inaccurate as far as value and.
Oh, the Chris Pope, Roy Webby book.
Right. I have it. And I one of the authors has passed away, and I don't want to bash them, but it's best used as a picture book. I mean, he even says, and this, I was on eBay then, so I know this wasn't a fact. He even says, if you win an auction on eBay, you get to negotiate if you actually buy it or not after you've won the auction. I'm thinking, that never was true. But, so, you know, it's a nice book, but it's not complete whatsoever. So, you know, that's something I've been thinking about. You know, I'd love to spin the blog off into a book. So you never know. You never know.
And since I did ask on Twitter, I did want to get in just before we finish. What would be up there as your favorite pieces of your collection that you've picked up?
Well, you know, that's like picking a favorite kid. there's a lot of things that, you know, have a personal connection, whether it's something that a wrestler gave me or, you know, some of them that I did make a connection with and, you know, something that I maybe made for them to sign, they really liked it. And some of them that have passed away, like Oliver Humperdinck or, as I mentioned, Donna Cristinello, some of them, like I said, have sent me stuff. Leilani Kai sent me one of her outfits. Because I think they know that I'm going to keep it. You know, it's not going to be thrown up on eBay. You know, it's going to be preserved. I'm one of the genuine fans and collectors. And there's a lot out there. You know, there's a ton. Most of them are. The one item that gets the most discussion and people that come over and see it or have seen it on trips or was with me when we lugged it to New Jersey, twice actually, is the Mellow Yellow Dusty Rhodes larger than life size cardboard store display. It's a cardboard stand of a Dusty Rhodes. He is the old U.S. title on. He has his big cowboy hat on, and he's holding the Mellow Yellow can featuring the NWA stars, which he did a commercial for. It's on YouTube. It's larger, but I said it's larger than life size because I've met Dusty many times, and it's taller than me, and I'm taller than Dusty at least now, so it's larger than life. I picked it up on eBay years ago, not very much at all in price, and then the shipping the seller way underestimated, ended up paying a lot more in shipping. I felt bad. Then I said, well, I have to get this thing signed, you know, because I'm big on the autograph. I've seen Dusty a few times, but I hadn't seen him in a while when I picked that up. Lugged it to one show all the way into New Jersey from Pittsburgh. He had to cancel. That was disappointing. I said, I'm never lugging it again. That's it. Finally, I think in 2013, yeah, I got it out there to him. His response was not PG rated. Holy blank is all I'll say. He loved seeing it. We posed for a photo with it. Then in Charlotte last year, I went up to him, and the promoter, Greg Price, said, because I'd had the can this time, Greg Price said, I saw it everywhere. He says, that's right, baby. He did get a signed, baby, and I got one since then. So I don't know where he got one, but Pound Dusty got his hands on one, too. It's really cool, and it's supposed to be upcoming. It's going to be featured in Dick. You mentioned Dick Bourne, who runs that great Mid-Atlantic Gateway site. I love it. I lose hours on that site. It's going to be in an upcoming book that Dick Bourne is doing on the United States.
You're cutting out a little bit. You still there?
I'm here, yeah. Should I go back? Or
You were saying Dick Bourne is doing a book?
Yeah, Dick Bourne's doing a book about the United States Championship, and he's going to be featuring the stand-up in the book and the can, the corresponding mellow yellow can that Dusty appeared on. And I'm really excited for it to be in a spotlight, you know. I'm excited to see my item in print.
Yes. And for those who want to see it, you did post photos of the can, of the NWA mellow yellow hat, and the Dusty cutout, as well as the NWA Ruse cutout.
Oh yeah,
the mm-hmm. Ruse shoes for your feet, pockets for your stuff, shoes in the April 9th post on your blog entitled "Endorse This." So yes, people go to wrestlingmemorabilia.blogspot.com, I think it's like the third or fourth post down, right? At least right now as we record this, and that was very cool for me to see. That was one of the things I always wanted to get, if not the cans, then also to get something like the 7-Eleven cups that they did a couple times.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did Legends in, current story. Yeah, Paper had one, and yeah.
And they did those.
Oh, you're talking about the
WCW. Yeah, like the 87 and 91, or whenever it was.
Right. They did that. I have a Dusty one from, I don't think it's 7-Eleven. I think it's from a more southern, I don't remember the name. We must have not had the chain up here in Pittsburgh, but I have a Dusty one from one of those chains down there. Yeah, and they did the rock and rolls. I mean, everybody had a cup. Crockett was big on cups, Crockett cup. Yeah.
So, yes, I know you need to go soon, and we went pretty long, but I really want to thank you for coming on. This has been a lot of fun talking about all this old stuff, and I'm definitely going to want to have you on again. So, yeah, I mean, if everyone wants to check out your blog, again, it's wrestlingmemorabilia.blogspot.com. You are JW's Wrestling Mem, M-E-M, as in memorabilia, on Twitter. And, yeah, I mean, that's it, I guess. I mean, anything else you want to close with?
Hey, it was a lot of fun. This is my first time doing a podcast, and I hope it's not the last. I'm going to come back.
Sounds good to me. So, yeah, thanks to everyone for listening. If you are finding this through iTunes or Voices of Wrestling, you can check out my archive of stuff at davidbix.com, where we also have my Amazon link if you want to support the show, or if you even want to give a little money directly. Also have my PayPal donation button and a Patreon link if you want to give monthly, but no worries if you don't want to, but if you could at least do the Amazon link, obviously that's appreciated since that you're not out anything you're not already spending. So that's about it. We will be back next week. And until then, so long. Fix.